It is Everton up next for the Reds. It is Ian Ryan with your pre-match warm-up. And I'm joined by Neil Atkinson, Ian Salmon and Kieran Molyneux for this one. We will have Luke Davis a little bit later in the show. But Neil, I do want to touch on the fixture first of all before we get stuck into the manager's press conference. Listen, a lot of things have gone wrong this season. I think it's fair to say one or two wrongs do need to be put right. And there's probably no better place to start than the Hill Dickinson Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock.
Yep, I think you're almost being too kind. There's a lot of players who've not played as well as we'd like. There's been a lot of bad results from Liverpool's point of view. There's been a lot of bad results in big games from Liverpool's point of view. But this is a massive game. If you'd have asked me before a ball was kicked this season, would you rather win the League Cup or would you rather win at the Hill Dickinson? I'd rather win at the Hill Dickinson. And there'll be some people who don't agree with that or don't like that, but I don't care. I think the idea of getting off on the front foot in that ground, I think is hugely positive for Liverpool. So it's a huge opportunity. You know, Liverpool can still finish third, fourth, fifth, sixth, maybe even seventh this season. I think if they win on Sunday, I'd be surprised if they finish beneath fifth at that point. But whichever way this season goes, if they've won at the Hill Dickinson, people will remember it as the season they won the first one at the Hill Dickinson. And that can sound reductive, but it's true. The people who were there will remember that. The people who are watching the game out in the city will remember that. And the Liverpoolians all around the world will remember that. They'll remember this fixture. And I think that to me is, you know, if I was Arne Slot, that's the thing I will be pointing out. It's a real opportunity for someone to grab a space in Liverpoolian folklore. And there's lads there who are already legends, so they can add one more bit to their legendary status. And there's some footballers, an example being Alexander Isak, an example being Ryu Ingamoa, an example even being Jeremy Frimpong, who so far have not got to achieve much in a Liverpool shirt. But if they're part of a win on Sunday, then people will remember that and it'll resonate, and it'll resonate for the rest of their Liverpool careers. You know, there's a lot of Liverpool supporters who, in the cold light of day, we all think we spent too much money on Andy Carroll, but everyone remembers the Andy Carroll header against Everton in the semi-final. It's a core part of football. It's the way football always has been, and I hope it's the way football always should be. Your games against your biggest rivals, especially on their turf, if you win them, it has a genuine resonance about it. And that's what's at stake for the Reds on Sunday, on top of the huge step forward it will be in the league. So yeah, for me, it's a massive game. It was always going to be a massive game. And I think it's also not, I don't want anyone to be too cool for school about it. You know, these are our local rivals. I am all in on beating Everton. I'm all in on beating them every single season. I'd love to beat them home and away every single season. It doesn't happen. It didn't even happen that often under Jurgen Klopp. Liverpool have only won two of the last 10 derbies at Goodison Park. The only issue is that seven of them were draws. They've only lost one of the last 10. So for me, this is, you know, that stretches back further. But for me, it's a massive day on Sunday. It really is.
It is massive. And Neil's right. You know, it's been a tough season. A lot of players haven't lived up to expectations. What did you think of the manager's mood this morning? I thought he was relatively upbeat. That's not to say I agreed with everything he said, because I didn't. But in terms of his mood, given the game midweek, given the Hugo Ekitike news, he looked as upbeat as you can probably imagine, really.
I actually thought it, because I watched it back a little later after the actual event. So I'd seen people saying about how upbeat he was. I was kind of like, it's too buoyant for me. I want determination. He was having a laugh at people. I didn't want to be having a laugh. We lost on Tuesday. We went out to the Champions League. Nothing against him acting like a human being, but I want the determination to win the next game. I don't want the gags. I don't want the talking about, you know, what the future looks like and how bright the future looks like, because the future looks really bright for this team. It's kind of like, yeah, but we didn't score any goals. And we had two people on the pitch who was there to score goals, and neither of them could contribute for different reasons. One injured and one who just didn't get into the game. So I'm not in the mood yet. And I was okay with Tuesday night. I thought we played well. I thought we threatened. I thought we worked bloody hard. I thought everyone put a shift in. I had no complaints about the performance. But we didn't win and we didn't score goals. And we didn't really threaten to score goals. So I'm not ready to be told how bright the future is yet and to see the manager in a good mood. That might be unfair to him, but, you know, that's currently how I feel about it.
Didn't win midweek, Keo, didn't score any goals, and also lost a really promising young centre-forward as well in Hugo Ekitike. We'll hear from the manager shortly on that, but you've just got to say it's a huge, huge blow for everyone concerned.
It's more than a huge blow. It's dangerous in the sense that we I don't know whether we're going to get the same player back. That's how bad this injury can be. I've seen something, you know, about other players who've had similar injuries and have spent 700 days off the pitch and stuff like that. It's an absolute nightmare, not just because of how good he looks on the pitch, but we need him. We need players on, you know. He's actually just coming back from injury now. He's probably going to have to start going forward for the rest of this season. And when we go into next season again, we're now in a situation where we're probably going to have to go back in the market for another striker, because the manager refers to it in the press conference. A lot of people questioned
why
we're still going after Alexander Isak when we've got Hugo Ekitike, and how that balance is going to work. I'm always in the camp of you need two top strikers, and I thought that we got them, but in typical Liverpool look, we've had, you know, the one that cost the most money break his leg, you know, our second striker now done his Achilles, and that adds to the list of the injuries that we've had for the other players that have come through. You know, Frimpong's had a tough season with injuries. Leone done his ACL in the first game that he played.
But even the Bert, Ekitike, Isak thing, just trying to get them three footballers on the pitch at the same time has proved unbelievably difficult.
Unbelievably difficult. And it's crazy to think we could be in spring 2027 before we see it again and we sign them, you know, maybe 6 to 8 months ago. So it's a really, really difficult one. The good news is, though, on the other hand, we have got Alexander Isak. If we didn't get Alexander Isak over the line and we were now looking to, you know, put square pegs in round holes again, we'd all feel a lot worse about it. But I can't say anything more than I wish they had a speedy recovery. I love Hugo Ekitike. I mean, there's been a little bit of criticism here and there, but what Liverpool player hasn't had some criticism in recent weeks. But I hope he's back soon. It's just a real, real shame.
And the other horrible thing is the way it happened as well, because it was an absolute nut. Yeah. It's literally, he goes to take a step forward and his entire foot just goes backwards from under him, and it's just terrible for lad, and we may never see him play the same way again.
It's a difficult one for him as well, isn't it? Because he's got the move to Liverpool after having a bit of a stuttered early start to his career. He's got the fans on side straight away. We've been saying all season about how much of a Liverpool striker he looks, and obviously his World Cup's out the window now as well, so it's going to be a real physical battle for him to get back, but it's going to be a tough mental battle for him as well, and I wish him all the best. I can't wait to see him back.
I think that tough mental battle, so he's going to need some good people around him, because I think, you know, reading like you've done about the injury and how long it can take, I think there are going to be days where, you know, you kind of almost, you just need good people to kind of keep your spirits up, because it will feel like an eternity for someone who is, what, still only 23 years of age. So it's going to be a long old road, but the way medical science is now, Keo, there's every chance that he does come back. Maybe not exactly the same, and you've got to accept that might be the case. He might lose a little bit of power in certain areas, but there's a good chance that, and the manager says this, he should hopefully come back in good nick.
He's in the best place for it, isn't he? I mean, if you're going to rupture your Achilles, you're probably going to want the doctors in one of the biggest and best clubs in the world. So I'm sure Liverpool will be doing everything they can to make sure that he gets back to the Ekitike that we've seen. But there's, like I said, Bailey, there's no denying how bad that injury is. The muscles come away from the bone there. It's a serious injury, and you can have that injury and, you know, set a goal for running a 5K again one day. I mean, that could be a real difficult thing. But to get back to the top of Premier League and Champions League level, and the intensity, is going to be a real, real tough one for him. But having said that, we've all seen Ekitike off the pitch and on camera across the course of this season. You know, he's full of life, and he's a confident lad. So hopefully he has got the right people around him, and he can dig in and get back into this Liverpool side to lift some trophies next year.
But the mental part, the damage of the fact that he's just broken into the national team, he's got World Cup coming up, suddenly his next chance of playing the World Cup is half his career away. That's a long time. It's going to be a hard one.
Here is the manager on that very subject.
No, he hasn't been operated yet. Devastating for him. Coming to a new club, having so much impact straight away. Playing against your former club in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. With so much more to come for him in the summer. Your first thoughts are then always with him being out for such a long time. Missing out on so many special moments. But he's not the first and will not be the last player that experienced something like this in the start of his career. And there are so many examples of players that came back so even stronger. And that's the challenge he has now. And I'm 100% sure he will be one of those that in 10, 15 years' time say, maybe this injury even helped me to become stronger and become even more ready to perform even at a higher level than I did before.
And Neil, other questions came up after the Ekitike stuff around Liverpool's business, summer business. I think you've been pretty clear over the last, certainly the last few weeks, months, when I've heard you talk about the business, saying it's not that complicated. I must admit, I've maybe felt it's got a bit more complexity than maybe you have. I think that was even before the Ekitike injury. But where are you with it now? Do you still feel the same in terms of what you did maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago? Obviously, now you have got to factor in the fact that Liverpool are going to be missing a centre forward for a large part of next season.
Yeah, I think it's really straightforward. They need to buy two players in wide areas with a ton of pace. They need to, I think, just work out precisely what it is they want to do in the middle of the park and make sure they're buying at least one clear starter for that. Maybe back that clear starter up with a young player. I think there's a bit of a question mark around right back, whether or not you can get a young player. It's interesting, they've been very strongly linked to Archie Gray, who's actually played a lot of his football this year at right back because of Bradley's injury. And now the other thing is, and I think it's absolutely fine, they could do with now getting another multifunctional forward in. Either that or a number nine is at the very start or the very end of his career as an option to cover for the loss of Ekitike. My position on all of this is, you know, we've got theoretically the best people in the world to do the job of recruiting for Liverpool, and the gaps are just crystal clear. Now, that's not the same as saying it's easy. Straightforward and easy are two different things. But the other thing to point out is a side with very good players is going to come 18th. Which gives you the opportunity to maybe go and cherry pick a couple of them that you like. And I'm just not in the mood to hear afterwards that this was hard or this was too expensive or this was difficult to plan for. You know, I think that you can accept that Liverpool have chosen to make a big move last summer and try to shift the side beyond Mo Salah specifically in quite a direct way. And you can also accept that that was difficult, and you can accept that it was impaired by the tragedy of what happened over the summer. But what you can't accept, it's clear on the 2nd of September, Liverpool need pace in wide areas. It's just crystal clear on the 2nd of September. So these fellas, who, as I say, are paid a hell of a lot of money and have got amongst the biggest budgets in world football to fix this, are in a position to be able to go and get someone. And I would say there's not, of the 18 teams, sorry, of the 19 teams that aren't Liverpool in the Premier League, 18 of them have an attacking player that would improve Liverpool. 18 of them. So I refuse to even have it that the footballers aren't out there. Now, would they improve Liverpool enough to be challenging PSG and Bayern Munich? That's a separate conversation. But would they just literally improve the Liverpool squad right now? Yes. So I'm just not in the mood whatsoever, and I won't be throughout the entirety of the summer, to be told this is difficult, to be told even that money's hard, money's tight. You earned the most money of any club in the Premier League. And I'm not saying that that money doesn't go back into the club, it all does. But if you've got to take a couple of risks now, well, you took them anyway last year, you've got to keep going. And we're not in a position not to be able to do that. And my position remains, everything is straightforward. As I say, that is not the same as easy. That is not the same as saying that everyone just comes off the rack. But the decisions are all already made. So, you know, you need two wingers, go and get two wingers. As I say, I would like to see one more multifunctional forward now, either someone who can play 9 and 10 or someone who can play wide as well and in there. Liverpool should have 5 starting options next season for the front three that aren't Hugo Ekitike or Rio Ingamawa, because you might as well just write it Ekitike off. Yeah, I read a really interesting piece with Eze about him coming back into Crystal Palace. It's on Crystal Palace's official website. And it talks about his recovery. And the piece is written after he scored a goal for Palace. It's his first goal back after the injury. And it's took 11 games. So he's had the injury, he's had recovery, he's had 11 games, and now he's netted. And now they've done the interview with him. And he recovered quick. It only took him 6 months from the same injury. But the point about that is, when he played his first game back, he hadn't recovered. He wasn't ready. But they were getting them back up to match speed. Well, that's the point, is that it's best to sort of... Liverpool have got a plan, as though Hugo Ekitike will not be at match speed next season. But he should hopefully be, all things crossed, by the start of the 27-28 season. So if you have one too many, well, that's a problem that you solve because you bought one too many, if you see what I mean. That's a problem you solve in the summer of 27. Liverpool cannot go into another transfer window thinking every decision's got to be perfect right now and perfect for 5 seasons' time. there's a job to be done next season, which is to reassert Liverpool in terms of the top two, three in the Premier League and also in Europe. And as I say, I'm just not interested in excuses. I'm not interested in hiding places. It's crystal clear what the job is, and the people who are paid a ton of money to do it need to go and do it.
It's the bringing back of Ekitike will mirror the attempt to bring back Isak at the beginning of the season. That cost us so much traction in the league to start off with. The fact that we're trying to get him fit on the pitch, him and McAllister at the same time, just cost us games that we weren't strong enough in. And Ekitike will be in the same position in a year's time.
You don't want a situation, do you, where you're next season and you're in April and you're starting Ekitike. Like, he just started to be exactly the night and he's ineffective. He looks unfit, he can't move properly, etc. You don't want that situation. So Liverpool are going to have to find. I like the idea of what Neil said there of a number nine at the end or the start of his career. I mean, we know Liverpool do business. There's always a resale value. There's always are they young enough. There's criteria in which we sign players. But when you have situations like you've had this summer, like you've had with Ekitike this week, you might have to just fill a gap for a year. While you get yourself back on track, and I really like the idea of a Morientes signing.
Yeah,
you know, if someone who's been there and who's done it and who's going to come to Liverpool for 12 months, who might not play every single week, but then when we get to the summer of 27-28, we can move him on and not go, we just moved on a 23-year-old striker there for, you know, who's got a huge price tag above it.
Because financially, that could be the difference between Champions League and not Champions exactly, League. Yeah.
Kia, where are you? I mean, I agree with lots of what Neil said there in terms of I'm not really interested in excuses. When I talk about it being a little bit more complex, I mean, Neil reeled off a lot of kind of positions there. I think I counted that's at least five potential signings you've got to make, you've got to integrate. You know, if you're going to go and try and sign three forwards, for instance, that's not easy to do. You could try and sign top forwards when there's a World Cup, and then you've got to get them integrated. That's why I talk about the complexity of it. I think there's question marks around some of the midfielders. When we talk about players not living up to expectations, I think you can shine a big fucking light on a lot of that midfield as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Dom Szoboszlai's perfect, but he's one where performance levels have been pretty consistent and high. I don't think Gravenberg's got to that level this season. Now, there might be some mitigation around, you know, what's around him and stuff at times, but I don't think he has. I don't think Curtis Jones has. Alexis McAllister definitely fucking hasn't. And there's question marks around McAllister and Jones and what you do with them. There is a right-back question. And then there's a goalkeeper question.
I'm about to say,
There's a goalkeeper question. And if you're going to go and get a new number one, if Alisson is going to move on, and there are some rumours, then you've got to look at what comes next through the door, because the current backup fella doesn't look like he's potentially up to it in terms of just taking that mantle right now. So I think there is some complexity to this, and I think it is quite difficult to, in a summer where you are, it is truncated, you've got to navigate a lot of that, and that's before you get to the money question, and the manager's putting things out there that suggest Liverpool are going to have to generate money before they can go and buy players.
It's heavy, isn't it? I don't know where to start with that, really, other than the sense of, I think there's another position as well.
There's a lot to do, is what I'm saying.
The left-back situation as well, with obviously Andy Robertson now leaving, and we've talked about this, Neil, haven't we? And you've sort of sold me on the fact that Kostas Tsimikas probably will come back.
As you said it today.
Yeah. As that's one less signing to make. But Liverpool do need players. I don't know where, I'm hoping Alisson signed that contract with the intention of completing the season next year. I hope that's not, we're signing the contract and then we might negotiate a fee this summer and he moves quicker than expected.
But there's a difference between signing the contract with the intention of playing next season and being injured all of next season.
That's another conversation, isn't it? But
it's part of complexity.
I agree with you. There's questions around the second choice keeper. The right back situation, given Conor Bradley's injury record, I'd be looking for a right back. I like Frimpong, but I think he is probably more suited to further down the pitch, and I think we'll probably see him used more as an attacking option as we will a defensive option during his Liverpool career. The midfield's a really difficult one. I mean, Alexis McAllister is the one on everyone's lips, isn't it? He looks like miles off it. It's been a huge drop off in the numbers. There's a huge drop off on the eye with him. So you would look and assume Liverpool might have a little look at what you can get for him, whether it's time to move him on. But then you look at Curtis Jones out of contract to it, and then we'll grab him extra signed the contract. But as you just said, he's not the best of seasons. Will his position change slightly? Will he come out of that six and move forward? And we will look for a proper holding midfielder. There's some serious questions in the midfield, and if two of them do leave, I think we need one anyway. If two of them do leave, and then you've got the complexities around Szoboszlai and his next contract. you could be looking at a complete overhaul midfield.
This is where the numbers start to crank up,
and,
I think.
And I've said this a few times, I was pleased with everyone that we got through the door this summer. I still am. I think they're all going to be great signings. But in hindsight, looking back a little bit, did Liverpool do too much change? And we've seen historically over the course of the Premier League, when teams have these summers where they change huge amounts of players, it's very rare that they go straight into the next season and have a big successful season where they win, you know, the league title or the European Cup. It does take time. So with the season the manager's had, obviously we don't know where we're going to be with the manager, to change, the wholesale changes again, I don't know where that leaves Liverpool on the opening day. Liverpool have brought in 6, 7, 8 players again, and we're in a transitional season and or a manager. I don't know what that does for Liverpool start.
But the two teams who come on the top of the league have brought in 2 players in the final third. They were getting a ton of starts for them, and they're first and second. So this idea of it's hard if you bring in 2 players, let's be clear about this. Why players are why players. Yes, there'll be nuances, and yes, you need to get to know your teammates. But that's the case for every side now. You know, there's very few teams who do a full at what we have, we hold. So you look at the minute, you know, Arsenal at the minute at least, Gyökeres, Madueke, Eze are starting a ton of games. Well, they weren't there this time last year, the top. All right, well, who's second? Well, Semenyo's new. Who else is new? Cherki's new. They're second. That's 2 players who play in the final third.
And they've got a centre-back who's playing else for his skin that we'd signed in August.
We tried to sign in August, yeah. Exactly, and he's there. And Kucherov wasn't starting centre-back for them last season either, I hasten to add, and they've got that bedded in. Again, this is back to, I'm not making excuses for Liverpool in advance, Ian. I'm not having excuses made for Liverpool in advance. You buy 2 wingers, that shouldn't, if you've got, to this, I do think re-signing Konate is really important, but if you've got continuity with the goalkeeper, and I think that the goalkeeper staying, Arnold's making the best of it with him for a year is really important. But if you've got the goalkeeper, Van Dijk, Konate, Gravenberg, Wirtz and Isak, that is the spine of your team that have had. Now, they haven't had enough of it on the pitch, but that's 12 months for the spine of that team. They've given Gravenberg the contract at big money. So that decision's made. So I understand it's difficult to say, oh, well, you know, they've got to work something out in midfield. Well, they've already started doing that. By the way, they've already bought a centre-back. So they've chosen a centre-back that they want as well. And this is what I mean. And this is where I'm impressed with them.
2 if you count Leone.
Well, but this is where I'm impressed with them, though, in that they've got ahead. They've made some decisions. They've gone, right, he's the centre-back we want, and they've got him in. They've committed to Gravenberg, as we're doing Gravenberg. Now, whether or not Gravenberg moves and a deep lying player comes in next to him, that's the decision that they then get to make. But the spine there is pretty set. There's going to be 1 change in the spine. The team that are currently top made 1 change in the spine. Well, 2, actually. They changed the centre-forward and they brought in Zubimendi. So are we saying we can't compete? Fuck off. Sorry. We should be planning to compete. Changes in wide areas? Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the right-back thing is frustrating because I think that it wouldn't be the worst thing for them to run with Bradley. But if they've got to move Gomez on to get a lad in who they see as can do 2 years of a job at right-back because you need to write next year off for Bradley, well, there's tons of right-backs. Evans is a lad they got who was 6'6" from Lyon, who they paid a fair bit of money for, but not loads, who's done a perfectly adequate job in the Premier League for them. There are footballers out there who can come in and play right-back when you don't want to use Frimpong. And this is what you'd have coaching for. So I accept, well, the World Cup will make it a little bit tougher. Of course it will. I accept the idea of settled sides are better. Well, of course they are. But what I'm not having is in advance, oh, everything's too hard. No, it's not. It just isn't. But also they've made decisions already. So I'll sound like I'm remarkably unsympathetic, but the reason why it'll sound like that is because I am. I am remarkably unsympathetic because if you can't finish the job you started last summer, you should never have started the job you started last summer, lads.
Let me be clear. I'm not interested in excuses. That's not what this is about. I think Ireland have made some mistakes. Where I get a little bit annoyed is that they could have done some stuff in fucking January, and I can't believe they didn't, because it would have made life easier. And City, you talk about Manchester City. What did they do? Made 2 fucking signings in January. Yep. 2 lads that Liverpool, in my opinion, should have been fucking banging the market for. Now, I understand the gay things get a bit too rich for our blood. Totally accept that. But they should have got it done in August. And then Semenyo just looks like a player who solves a multitude of fucking problems because he can play in all 3 positions. That's where I'm saying now. I think they've made it harder for themselves. Not that I accept excuses, but there was things they could have done just to help themselves a little bit, because I think there are 6, 7, 8 questions there, and all of a sudden shifting Gravenberg, bringing another midfielder in. What are you doing about Jones? What are you doing about McAllister? The manager's now talking about, well, maybe we haven't got to trade that much because we'll try and keep the core of what we've got. It just feels like there's maybe more questions than answers, and that's where I'm starting to get concerned. Not about making excuses,
just that I don't necessarily like the noise that I'm hearing from certain people.
But isn't this the noise that you get sort of quite consistently? And what
maybe
I mean by
so,
at all the clubs,
maybe.
Because what I mean about this is Liverpool almost certainly should sell one midfielder in the summer. They possibly should sell two. But I'd like to see them replace, if they do one, certainly replace with two midfielders, one of whom is going to come in. And he might not start game one, because one of the link I've most liked recently in a mad way is Senesi. And the reason why I've liked the Senesi link is because what it suggests to me is Liverpool have learned from last summer, which is that, let's say Konate is going to go and they replace Konate with Senesi. Senesi should not be ending next season as Liverpool's first-choice centre-back. But if he starts at first-choice partner for Van Dijk, that gives time for Xhaka and Leone to get the sea legs. And hopefully, and this happened literally to Senesi when he was at Bournemouth, Zabanyi and Huijsen overtook him in a season. And we want that to happen. But what we'd have is someone who comes in and knows the league from minute one. So I'm into that as a link. As I say, I'd rather Konate just signs and you go from there. But I'm into that as a link. To me, it makes a ton of sense and it shows a bit of learning, because what they could have done with last summer, you know, we would now, in my view, and a lot of people won't like either of this that I'm about to say, but if we'd have signed Dominic Nathaniel Calvert-Lewin or kept Darwin Nunez, neither of whom should be starting Champions League quarterfinals for Liverpool or any club for that matter, I think Liverpool would have 10 more points right now. And if Liverpool have got 10 more points right now, we're not fretting about European qualification for next season. I don't think we'd have been title challenging, but I think we'd have 10 more points, because it would have given Ekitike time to get his sea legs. It would have given you time to pick Nunez, sorry, pick Isak where you wanted to pick him. You might even have got to have a little look at Ekitike off the left in that universe I've just described. And there's less pressure on Gakpo through the season. One more option would have made a difference and they would have been better. So I'm pleased with the Senesi link, because to me it shows the thinking a little bit, and it might be nonsense. The whole thing could just be Asian chatter.
So you get linked with Tottenham Spurs if they retain Premier League status,
which is a massive if at the minute. But it's nice to see. I can see why. I would not want the player to be a first choice Liverpool centre back for a season, but I can see why it makes sense. And this is back to, for me, you know, there's loads of things you can do just to mitigate and make it easier for yourself that they've routinely failed to do, because the hunt is for perfection. And what we can see at the minute from the team that are first and second in the league, come back onto Europe another day, but the team that are first and second in the league, is you cannot make perfect be the enemy of good. There isn't a single player that starts in attack for Arsenal that I would want if all of Liverpool's attacking options were fit and in Salah's case were playing as well as they were playing last season. You know, I'd start Ekitike, Isak and Salah. If you give me last season Salah ahead of anything that Arsenal have got, but I would take every single one of them to be added to Liverpool's squad, even the fucking plasterer at this point with Ekitike's injury. We could do with someone who can do the job the plasterer has done for Arsenal this season, carrying some load up front for Liverpool, and say what you want, the fella can carry a hod. So I, you know, perfect cannot be the enemy of good. And if Liverpool do a summer where they make perfect the enemy of good, we'll all be sitting here, I think, talking around this time next year about another set of missed opportunities.
Here is the manager on the summer business.
No, I think for the people who watch the Paris Saint-Germain game, and they, depends by the way on which game you're watching. but if you're watching the home game, I think it's fair to say for me that the future does look bright, and that we were able to have more ball possession than them, to generate 21 shots, to have a high XG against a team that is used to the fact that they dominate ball possession. Even if you take into account that Hugo had to go off after 30 minutes, something like that. Alex had to go off at halftime. So if you would see them playing over 90 minutes, being in their best shape, then this team has already shown, as they did in so many other moments, that they can compete with the best in Europe. So we've beaten here at home the other three other quarterfinalists with Atletico, Real Madrid and Arsenal. So that tells you that this is already a very strong team. But it takes some changes because of what you just said with Robbo and Mo leaving. But yeah. As I said many times, future looks right for us.
Annie, let's get to Everton then. In terms of the perfect fixture, the man who was asked about it, is it the perfect fixture after PSG? What do you think?
I've no idea anymore. I genuinely went to ask a question. I was like, I don't know what a perfect fixture is, because this season's been so weird. that we've had loads of perfect fixtures to get back into back on our feet, and we buggered every single one of them up. So, is it a perfect fixture? It's a derby game. It has to be won. But whatever this weekend's game was, it had to be won because we've only got what, five late games left in the season.
Six.
So we've got six games left. We have to win these six games. So it doesn't matter what this game is. We had to win it. Wherever we were playing, we had to win it. We also have to win the next five. So this is, for me, I disagree with what Neil was saying before slightly, and I agree with a lot of it. I personally would have liked to have won the Carabao Cup because I like shiny things and it would have been nice. But the idea of winning the first derby, the Hill Dickinson, is psychologically, it's a massive thing to do. Just in terms of local rivalry, the fact that we could go there and win that game would be massive for us. So it is massive. I don't know how many of our players understand that concept at the moment because we talk so much about the disconnect between fans and the team and the club. I don't know if they will feel the same way. Maybe they need to see it as just another game, but then all the just another games we've played all season.
Been crap at them as well.
Yeah. So who knows? We're not good with pressure and we're not good without pressure. Who knows what's
this is the week here. I mean, you know, try telling my nerves that it's the perfect fucking game.
It
doesn't feel like it to me. And what I've seen of Liverpool this season, it doesn't strike you as the perfect game. Now, listen, at 4 o'clock on Sunday, that might feel totally different because they go and fucking win it.
Oh, it's the perfect game.
It'll suddenly feel like it's the perfect game because it should give you the springboard to go into what comes next.
Yeah.
But just sitting here right now, these boys, they've got to be fucking prepared for what's to come on Sunday. And I'm expecting Everton to be right at it from minute one. They'll be smelling a little bit of blood, and so they should, by the way, given what's kind of unfolded this season for Liverpool. So whoever gets picked, and we'll get into selection shortly, whoever gets picked, they have to be prepared to start with a bit of aggression and determination, and just to be at it from minute one, because there's no slow start here, boys. If you start slow in this match, you could be two down on 20 minutes, and that will not be acceptable. So I want to see Liverpool front foot, early doors. It doesn't have to be silly. You don't have to score in the first 20, but at least play with purpose and look like you are at it from the very first minute.
Completely agree. This isn't a perfect fixture. Not for me, anyway. I mean, it'll feel perfect once we get the results. But sat here right now, if I was a Blue Nose, I'd be rubbing my hands together to face this Liverpool side. It's a wounded animal. And not just over the course of the season, literally our last result. We were knocked out the European Cup. From a Liverpool perspective, you nearly said it. Whoever's picked, I want to see them ready to go to Worry, to be honest. I really do, because I've been supportive of the players and the manager and everything over the course of the season while there's still objectives to be achieved. I was looking at the FA Cup and being like, well, today at Wembley with the lads and another piece of shiny silverware. And then I was looking at the European Cup and was like, well, that is a real chance. Never mind just turn the season around. I have to turn the season into a historic season where, you know, we've been really up against it, but then we get past the European champions and put ourselves in a Champions League semi-final. You've heard me say the monologue several times this year. But now we're out of everything. And they didn't look like they had fight when they had the possibility of winning trophies. So they better look like they've got some fight in them when they've messed it up and they're out the European Cup and they're out the FA Cup and there's no silverware to win. And also as well, Everton are feeling good about themselves at the minute. Everton are in a good position in the league at the minute. I mean, there's potential for them to get Champions League qualification if Aston Villa win the Europa League, which is very, very possible. So one, I want to see Liverpool put Wednesday night right. But as a lad who grew up in this city and has been through many derbies, I want to spoil Liverpool season myself. I want to go there and, you know, wipe the smile off the face. And no matter how bad Liverpool have been and how much they're enjoying watching Liverpool crash out at Paris Saint-Germain, we still go to their ground and we still put it on them and we still come out of there, you know, singing Liverpool songs and realising that we are still a fucking team in this city. So It's a massive, massive game for that reason. I mean, to win the first Hill Dickinson derby might set you up to win the first 3, 4 or 5. But like I said to you, as I started saying there, if I was an Everton fan at the minute, I'd be looking at this and I'd be rubbing my hands together. And what that means is when that stupid fucking siren goes off, they're all going to be on their feet and they're going to be absolutely roaring. A big stupid tifo is going to come down, but they're going to be angry, foaming at the mouth, ready to hit Liverpool and put a full stop on the end of the season and potentially damage the Champions League qualification. So the old saying, form goes out the window in the derby, and I really hope Liverpool do put their own form out the window, because the form's been terrible, and what's done is done now without the competitions, and there's no silverware to win. So we're going for pride here first and foremost at the weekend, and we're also going for 3 points, because if you are going to do anything with what's left of the season, we have got to go and win the 6 games and make sure we're back in that European Cup next year with a chance of winning it. And yeah.
Hey, we'll hear from Luke Davis shortly before we get Neil's kind of tactical insights on what might unfold. But obviously you've got to earn the right to play in these football matches, but also, you know, putting that to one side, you want the tactical plan to be on point as well. And for me this season, Liverpool has been far too open in lots and lots of games, nowhere near as compact enough. So yes, you want them to show all the characteristics and all the things I mentioned before in terms of aggression and stuff, but actually the tactical stuff, the manager's got a big part to play on Sunday. He's got to get that right as well.
He's got to get completely, totally spot on. I think what I would want to see is the second half of the other night. I want to start like that. I think the way we started in the second half, that's how we should be starting against Everton, just taking the game to them and pinning them back. I want to see some actual aggression from us. I want to see, we're basically going into the most feral a new stadium's ever been in history, because the atmosphere there is going to be unreal, because this is massive for them. This is going to be like Galatasaray away again. It's going to be that level of absolute focus on putting us off as much as possible. So I want strong mentality from them, but I want them attacking immediately. I want us to be able to take the game to them. I don't want them to actually try and sit and absorb it, because we've been shit at that all season. So I want to see us pushing at it and trying to actually, I'd like to see us enforce ourselves on a game for a change, because there's been so little of that all year.
But injuries aside and form aside, Liverpool got better players than Everton. They've still got a better squad than Everton. So this, we should be going in there feeling like the favourites and ready to take the games. I don't want to see Liverpool go in there and try and take the sting out of things or knock the ball around. I want to see Liverpool take the game to them.
I don't want to go in respecting them.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Luke Davis on the Blues.
Luke Davies is with me to talk about Everton. First and foremost, what should everyone expect from the Hill Dickinson, Luke? You know, this is the key question. It's the first Merseyside derby there, and I haven't really got a strong sense of what to expect in any way, really, the practical, in terms of how loud it gets. It obviously hasn't had a Merseyside derby yet, so, you know, Goodison was always loudest for when Liverpool came to town. What should everyone expect?
Yeah, as always, you know, he's always good. I think Goodison was that. Certainly in sort of like the 2-0 Klopp's last derby, but even the last derby, the last one at Goodison, the goal at the end, like, it was a bit of a bear pit, and I think, like, especially the night games can be like that, and I think we haven't really seen that as much, albeit because, like, Wolves are home, Burnley are home, basically almost all the home games have either been on Sunday or midweek or a Monday, so obviously that then takes away that aspect of it. But then I think we've seen with the Chelsea game, like, it's a big win, you know, it's a big scalper. Like, great performance, a great result in general. Obviously, then, because that game's the last five and it's on the weekend, it just adds to the atmosphere. Like, just something different about it, rather than it being even at half-12. And again, like, the derby, yeah, it's on a Sunday. But I think, like, if it was on a Monday night or a Wednesday, maybe it takes away from it. But the fact is that it's a weekend day. There's a bit of build-up to it now as well. Like, you're on a bad run, results. You've gone out to Champions League. You're sort of hanging your hat on now qualifying for the Champions League next season. That's the big thing now, isn't it, for you? There's uncertainty over it's not going to be there, even though it looks like it will be. But I think there's still that sort of aspect of it. But even though you're above us in the table, it's almost like we're coming into the game sort of a lot more in a more positive space. Like, it's like Moyes, the fans, the players, it's almost like we're above you in the league. No, obviously we're not. Like, I think it's like a team that's feels really tired and can't wait for the season to be over, whereas we've still got a lot to play for.
So as part of that then, do you think it would be fair to think of Everton as favourites going into the game?
I'd say, I don't think we'll get beat, but I also, you know, I think there's obviously the world where it is, it's a 1-1, it's a 2-2 even, I think there'll definitely be goals. I think there's sort of definitely goals in sort of our defences. Even though it's been a little bit better lately, I think we are susceptible to conceding, and I think obviously use as well. And I think whether you'd say we're favourites, like, I think, yeah, if we're at home, we probably are looking, I think, and be at least on a positive result and performance. But obviously, you know, we don't win many at the derby. So,
well, I was about to say, though, isn't this, I think this could be the first derby I can think of in, you know, certainly maybe going back to possibly 13, 14. where, you know, the Goodison derby of 13-14, where, and that was a great game, but where the draw might be at least a mildly disappointing result for Evertonians, strip back all the context, I mean, before the ball's kicked, what I mean? If Everton go down to 10 men in the first 10 minutes, a draw is a great result. But if, you know, if allowing for where everyone is at the minute, what the table's saying for Everton as well, you know, with the prospect of European football next season, all of that, Everton have only got three more home games left. I know there's a really good away record this season, but Everton only got three more home games left. One of those is against Man City as well. Yeah. You know, there is a bit of a thing here, isn't there, where Everton could just do with the points. So a point is, you know, it's often a sort of a Goodison derby outcome is a draw. But it does seem to me as though this time out a draw would feel like it was a bit disappointing.
No, yeah, I totally agree. Like normally, as you said, like in isolation, the derby is a game in isolation normally. Normally you say, going for the league, or you're going for at least something. You've got, you sort of got one eye on another thing normally, whereas that's not the case for you now. Whereas for us, but normally by now, we're like, we're safe, but we're not really going for Europe, or like we have obviously had the relegation battles, but usually the last 20 years, if you're playing news at this point of the season, there's not much to play for apart from the bragging rights of wanting to win the derby. But as you've said, like now it is different because there's teams up there, Brighton, Sunderland, even Newcastle to an extent, all like obviously Brentford will level on points with as well. It's every point matters now. And I think, yeah, I don't, it's probably not a bad result, a draw like now. But if Brentford win on the weekend, it is, isn't it? Because yeah. I think, because that is something we need, it's something that we've been starved of for years is European football. And all the teams, like you would look at the Conference League or even the Europa League, like, it's just another Europa League campaign. Like, but for us, like, I've never been to like an away game in Europe with Everton because I was 13, 14 and when we were last there. Like it is a big thing for people that go to the matches. It adds sort of, obviously, the new stadium, it adds something else to that, European football there, albeit, yeah, it might be in the Conference League. But I think it pushing the club forward, and obviously we're looking a bit ahead here, but getting in Europe, it could be massive. And I just think, yeah, obviously, we probably do come into this game at least fancying ourselves a little bit more than usual.
Just on the European points, you know, you say that how long it's been, you know, if Everton did manage to get any European football next season, it would feel, wouldn't it, with the new grounds, with the new ownership, it would feel like it was part of a massive leap forward. I mean, this is sort of what's at stake, I think. I think the obvious stuff that's at stake in a derby is at stake. The idea of the first one in the new ground is at stake. But for both clubs in different ways, you know, whether or not there is European football for Everton, and from Liverpool's point of view, where there's likely to be some form of European football, not inevitable even right now, but there's the type of European football. That is, you know, in the most critical way, really, that is the thing that's at stake.
Yeah, definitely. I think for us, I think obviously, you know, you want to be in the Europa League over the Conference League, but I don't think anyone's thinking, it's going to be Conference League. Like, I think it's more just like, we need European football. It adds something else to the season. Again, it's another chance to, because I think even the FA Cup and to an extent the League Cup aside from Newcastle, it kind of is a bit of a closed shop. You have the odd team like Palace, Leicester winning it in recent years, but it's not very often you get someone outside of the sort of so-called top six winning it. So I think you add another competition in, especially now in the Europa League, it doesn't have them Champions League teams dropping down. And we've seen, like, Villa, like, at the time of recording, now Villa and Forest could potentially both reach the semi-final. You know, we have West Ham have had success in both of the European competitions, reached the semi of the Europa League, won the Conference League. Palace look like they're going to reach the semi-final as well. So it's, like, it's more than just sort of... I think we could have a real go at winning the European trophy, and all that's something that sort of... You know, we've had the Cup Winners' Cup, but... Sort of in living memory, we've never had even the opportunity to get near it. I think that the furthest we got in Europe is round 16. And that is because a lot of the teams would drop down from the Champions League. I think, like, just both of them competitions, and I'm not going to say it's easier to win, but I think you, as a Premier League team, any Premier League team looks at them competitions, I think, yeah, like, you're fancying yourself to get to at least the latter rounds now the Champions League. Teams don't drop into them.
Last thing then is selection. I don't think there'll be any surprises. I suspect he'll go unchanged from the side that played against Brentford. Do you think there's anything he might have up his sleeve?
Not really. No, I think it's sort of the team does pick itself in a way, doesn't it? It's a shame that sort of someone like Grealish on an occasion like Sunday isn't playing. You know, you've got McNeil and Jai. it sort of picked itself. You know, Beto is now again the main man, even though Barry had a little period sort of around the winter time where he looked like he was going to be the main man. He was putting him away, but now obviously Beto has proved he probably is the more prolific goal scorer, even though I don't think either of them are great. But yeah, I think Beto sort of, he has caused problems like at times in the derby in the past. Like, he probably should have had a couple of goals at Anfield in the 1-0 last season. I think the team does pick itself. I think you look at the side, it's obviously Pickford's in goal, O'Brien, Tachowski, Bramfleet, obviously Mikhailenko, then Garner. It's just the team does just pick itself. I just can't really see any surprise. I think it'll be like, George played well against Brentford last week, but are you going to throw him into starting the derby? Probably not. I think maybe someone that, yeah, if you're going for it and Liverpool on the road.
Well, I feel like you can almost pick a subs, can't you? You know, Irabuman will come on at some point. George will come on, like you say. Barry may well come on. Apart from that, probably no one else gets on unless there's an injury. You know, it does seem as though that is, even that at the minute, he feels like he's got that the way he wants it, game in, game out.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's sort of like, Moyes has always been like that, even in the sort of first 10 years as Everton manager. He liked a settled side. You could almost say the team picks itself. If you don't get beat the week before, or unless like obviously suspension or injury, you're going to pick the same team. And like, I think he should. I think that Brentford sort of game last week was, it's like a basketball game. I think both teams are sort of equally as good and equally as sort of lacking in certain areas as each other. And I think we're probably obviously there the moment our rivals. And I think, yeah, you nick a point at the end. Obviously, you score a late goal. But I think, we all did have a chance earlier, which you probably should have put away as well. So I think, yeah, the team picks itself. And I don't really have any issues with that. I don't really have much to sort of add to that, really.
Okay. Last thing is, if, let's say Everton don't win, it doesn't rule them out, does it, of still kicking on to get European qualification? You know, the sides are also tightly bunched.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be, you know, from the Everton's point, in the same way that Liverpool have now got themselves a 4-point gap from fifth to sixth. If Liverpool get beat, which, you know, would be, feel like a hammer blow, but you'd look at the league table and Liverpool wouldn't be any worse than fifth by the time the weekend finishes. From Everton's point of view, allow for the idea of an Everton draw. I don't think it then means that, for instance, you're all looking around going, well, there's no chance of getting Europe now. You know, I think that it looks to me like this season's likely to be live for Everton until the final game.
You'd hope so. I agree. It's on them where, obviously, again, it depends on the other results, but so many teams around it. You're not just hoping for Brentford to drop points. You're hoping for the three others behind us to also drop points. Yeah. You need to sort of take care of that yourself. I think the issue is, like, the games you got, apart from maybe Sunderland at home, I think we look at Spurs away, last game of the season. If they've got a win to stay up, probably going to beat us. That's how I'd look at it historically anyway. Also, then you think like West Ham away, another game where, yeah, they're going to want it. They're fighting for their lives. They're going to want it more than us. And then City at home is another one where maybe if this was earlier in the season, I think, oh yeah, we do these today. But it just seems like City are now on that trajectory where they're going to just absolutely do everyone. Because obviously the league is in sight. I think obviously we'll learn more after the Arsenal game this weekend, but it's hard to say whether we are going to definitely be in Europe because, yeah, we're right there at the moment. But I think quickly, I don't know if this is the Everton in me speaking, it could quickly drift away. But then in the same breath, you've got games where, yeah, we could go to West Ham and win. We've been great away from home. Like, we could go to Spurs and win. Spurs could be down by then. I don't think they will be, but sort of, it could get so toxic if we go ahead there. Like, it's a win. It's tough, but, you know, it's nice to be having this conversation at this time of year because usually we're talking about sort of either we're 12th, 13th and safe and we're already on the beach or, you know, we're still fighting for our lives. So I think it's quite a nice conversation to have. And it feels like we've made progress, not just on the pitch, off the pitch. I think sort of, just obviously the stadium, but what comes with the stadium. I think that we feel like a Premier League club. Not a club that was a Premier League club in the 1990s. Now, you look at other events, they're announcing things all the time. Like, you look at other events at the Hill Dickinson, rugby games, international games. I think it feels different now, even though we have lost some of that sort of feel of Goodison, like that throwback ground. I think I went to Villa Park this season and it was a bit like, it's like going back to Goodison in a way. I think I do miss that, but I think, you know, you need to understand that now. It's moved on, and if we have seemed to be moving with it, and the team do as well, so it's positive.
All right. Good stuff from Luke. Let's get back over with Ian.
Neil, from a tactical kind of input, I mean, listen, you've not got your counters in front of you.
It's fine, I don't need them. I mean, it's
but what do you think?
If there was one not,
looks.
If there's one not on my counters in front of me, it's this. We've got a graphic from StatsBomb, which is what they did away at Brentford, where you'll see it's 4-2-3-1 with Beto dropping in alongside Dewsbury Hall. The two wide players sort of pushing on. I don't think he'll, unless there's something that comes out of David Moyes' press conference, I'd be really surprised if he changes it from the Brentford side. I think Beto's now got himself imposed in as his first choice centre forward for the rest of the season. I think McNeil has done a good job of getting himself back in the shake-up there, and I think he's actually playing quite well, McNeil. So I think that the side will just be that Brentford side, and I think it'll play like a David Moyes team. It'll play 4-2-3-1. They love Dewsbury Hall's movement, rightly. His movement's excellent. So Liverpool have got to be really conscious of that. But I think that they'll spend a lot of the game not wanting to play much football through midfield, Everton. I think it'll be very much, let's get the ball forwards, and then when it comes back to us, that's when we play. They won't be looking, I think, to play through the thirds. It'll be get the ball out of our third into their final third, and then we can have it sort of come back. There's a really clear blueprint, I think, a little bit, which is what they tried to do to Man United at home, but United hit them on the counter and won 1-0.
It's also Moyes' old Fellaini technique, isn't it?
It's Moyes' entire MO. And I refuse to believe Moyes is going to go away from Moyes' own MO for this, not least because the side have been playing well. But when we say playing well, it's worth saying, I think they've only won 6 at home so far over the course of the season. So you can talk about the atmosphere and say the atmosphere will be absolutely bang up. It will. But it's only 6 wins so far over the course of the campaign.
They had a really sticky spell, didn't they, at one point?
Yeah.
Where Tottenham were going there, Newcastle were going there, coming away with results.
And it's worth also pointing out that they've shown a ton of resilience, especially away from home. But they've only won one home game where the opposition have scored. So the first goal in every game is massive. The first goal in every derby is massive. But I think the first goal in this one's massive because Liverpool's record when they've conceded first this season is genuinely absolutely abject. So this is not an Everton side that, you know, I think if you think it's going to end, if Liverpool score 2 goals, I'd be really surprised if they lose. Really surprised if they lose. I know that's tempting fate. But I think if Liverpool were to score twice, I think I'd be really surprised if they got beat 3-2 or 4-2. And I think if Liverpool were to score 2 goals, I think they'd be in a really good shake of winning the game. So I think that's got to be sort of Liverpool's outset. But they're going to go over the top early in the game, hit Beto, look to pick up the bits, go from there, then start to play. Let's be clear, they play. Moyes' teams always play. But they only want to play where they want to play. I think, you know, Liverpool have got to have a real strong strategy in terms of what they're going to do. I think it's absolutely fine, and I think they showed a bit of this now against Fulham, against Muniz. It's absolutely fine for Beto to win first balls. You've just got to make sure you win the second. I think we saw in Klopp's last season, Konate got obsessed with the physical battle against Calvert-Lewin, and yeah. Calvert-Lewin does a really good job on him. They get in Everton's head, they keep dropping it into areas where Konate is not quite favourite. The smart thing to do in those instances is to say, you know what, you can win that. We're just going to get the next one and we're going to pick it up here. And I think that's got to be a little bit of thinking in the back of Liverpool's minds. If Beto wins 10 headers, but all 10 of them end up going to a Liverpool shirt, well, what's the point? But the key about that is you've got to make sure that all 10 of them go to a Liverpool shirt and go from there. So boxing clever is the most important thing, but I don't think this is, you know, tactically hard for the Reds.
It shouldn't be.
And also I'd be so surprised if there were surprises, for want of a, you know, sometimes this season I've been surprised the manager's come out afterwards and said, we didn't expect the opponent to do X or Y. But if Liverpool don't expect what they're going to get, then they're not doing the jobs properly in advance of this game. Anyone in the staff, the manager and all the staff around them, I would be astonished if there is anything that they don't see coming, even down to, I think he'll probably only make 3 subs, more he'll bring on Irabuman, he'll bring on George, and he might bring on one of the lads. I can't remember his name right now. Oh, Barry, obviously, for Beto over the course of the game. I'd be really surprised if he turns to his bench for anyone else. You know, and those subs will come between 70 and 80 because that's what he's been doing all season. It's that straightforward what you're going to get coming up against this Everton side. So why don't you just go and beat it?
Watch what Liverpool's look like, Keogh, in terms of selection. What do you think he does?
I don't know what he's at right back.
Yeah, manager confirmed Joe Gomez won't be involved in this one. So
yeah, that's what I was getting at. So it'd be Frimpong. I think he might go Andy Robertson. I don't know whether I would. I think Kirkez is really in a bit of a purple patch at the minute. I really, really like Kirkez. I like his energy, and I like the fact that he won't shake away from anything. But Andy Robbo's experience on his shoulders, someone to lead, another leader on the pitch.
it's one of those games where you'd like to play both of them, but you can't because the both can only play left back. But if you could, you'd like to, because they both have those certain things about them where you think, yeah, they're perfect for the derby, both of those players, but he will only pick one of them.
Yeah, and you can pick either of them. I mean, if he picks Kerkez, I'll understand it, but I'm just leaning towards the experience and what I talked about there about standards need to be in set and Liverpool to, you know, to turn up and ready to go to war.
The leadership and the mentality, isn't it? That's what he gives you that Kerkez doesn't yet.
Yeah, so.
But he'll give you the aggression as well, yeah, and stuff like that. But as I say, you are only going to be able to pick one of them.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Andy Robbo. Midfield. I might go Jones.
Yeah.
I might go Curtis Jones. I know he's had his critics lately this season. He's not had his best this season. He's had a bad season. I think people will make it out to be worse than what it is. But I'll go Curtis Jones, Gravenberg, and Szoboszlai.
Yeah.
And then I will go Rio Ingamoa, Cody Gakpo, and Mo Salah.
So no Verts for you?
No. No.
Pete, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm thinking pretty much the same. I'm one of the things I was going to say before when we were talking about buying in the summer, I still don't know where Verts plays. And I think maybe he's not the battle that we need, and Gakpo's possibly not the player they need to pass to. So you've got Verts and Isak as second half substitutions.
Yeah.
Because the first thing I was basing it around was there's no way you want to start Isak. We started him the other night and it just didn't work.
Sounds magic though. I mean, I've just set a team in the head because that's the one I can sort of see standing up to Everton.
And you forgot?
No, I didn't forget. Well,
I forgot Verts.
I didn't forget him. I just sort of in my head seeing what I wanted to win the battles and what I talked about to Ian before. But it would be it'd be a strange one not to start Florian Wirtz, wouldn't it? And you know, Rio Ingamoa's on the pitch and Florian Wirtz is not, and it doesn't go well, the questions will be asked about that. So maybe you could look at Wirtz off the left.
But Wirtz off the left and Rio isn't on the pitch and it doesn't go well, questions will still be asked.
Maybe, yeah.
And this is where they found themselves here. I'll bring Neil in a minute on it, but you know, the lads had a really good, interesting chat on Midweek Extra, I thought, about Wirtz. You know, I think Gibbo made the case for not starting him. And it's not just all about Bert, it's what's going on around him,
yeah,
in terms of the setup and stuff and not being able to get the best out of him. But the counter argument was made, and I think maybe Andy made it, that actually, or maybe it was Mel Stewart actually, but if you're not playing him in this game, that's also a little bit of a damn indictment, really, in terms of where we are. You know, he signed for a lot of money, 100 million quid, rising to 116. He should be one of Liverpool's best players. And if he's not playing in this fixture, then that just tells you a lot about where we found ourselves in the season. But it also feels like it could be a difficult one to start him and Rio in the same team.
Yeah.
But I think I can definitely make a case for Rio Ingamoa starting on the left-hand side. So this is where Liverpool have found themselves, really. I think there are some big decisions for the manager to make in this one.
I think Rio's pace on the left exposes their right back a little bit. I think Gakpo, when he came on, moved to midfield, when he came on the other night, and went straight into centre forward position. I thought he played really well. I thought he was an actual threat. I thought he was moving around. He looked threatening. He looked promising. Obviously, nothing happened. But and there's a moment with Wirtz where he played a perfect through ball into the box. Unfortunately, the only person in the box was Curtis Jones, and he couldn't get it out of his feet. If there'd been Isak there, or if Ekitike had been there, we'd have scored. It wouldn't even have been a question. So at the moment, you've got Wirtz loading bullets, and there's nobody that's able to find him for him. So he's not as effective because the team that's around him isn't. And this is the story of the season for me has been, we don't know where Florian Wirtz plays because he's played everywhere. He's played midfield. He's played across the front three. He's done a little bit of false nine being on the right, being on the left. We don't know where he plays yet. We don't know what the team looks like. And that's where the shopping in the summer is going to be difficult because we still don't know what the team looks like.
That's a mad situation though, isn't it? Yep. I mean, I didn't put him in my start 11 that I read off myself there, but if you're not playing one of the most exciting footballers and the one that we all think was the best signing out the lot, if you're not playing him because you don't know where to play him.
You're not playing him, you're just talking to the team. So, that's the thing, isn't it?
So that's a crazy situation to be in. And if you've got Alexander Isak and Florian Wirtz sitting on the bench in a Merseyside derby and you don't win it.
The Isak one you can kind of understand because of the fitness thing. I mean, if he was fully fit, there's no question that you go
he starts in the Champions League though, doesn't he?
So I know, but the manager was clear. He had 45, and I think he might be looking at this one thinking, I'd rather him finish the game. I think it was made more complicated by the fact that there's potentially, and listen, it doesn't go to extra time and never looked like it was going to go to extra time, but do you know what I mean? He's going to be thinking about all of those things. It's a bit different on Sunday, but I do think, unless he's had a really good week in terms of training, but we know they've had a couple of days off and stuff, so
you're looking at Isak and thinking probably it might be off the bench.
You can understand it, but just mean from, you know, you look at the bench and you see Isak and Vaid sat there.
Oh, I'm with you. The Vaid thing, especially, if that's what happens.
Now, I reeled the team off and didn't put him in just because, you know, I was thinking about players that definitely want in there and then players who complement each other there. But I don't think you could probably can justify starting Rio and Gamora over Florian.
But I think
but at the same time, he's the one who looks the brightest, looks the sharpest, and the one who looks
I
like
that's why you can make a case for him starting. Whether you know the putting Vaid to one side, I think you can absolutely make a case for Rio starting, given what you've said about, you know, the performance against Fulham and stuff, and he looked bright, he scores a goal, etc. But this is where it gets complicated, Neil, because you know people will want to have Florian Vaid in the starting lineup, understandably, because he's got a ton of ability. He can be a goal threat. He can create. We've got to see loads of it recently. Again, there may be some mitigation there. But, you know, I think John's reason for not starting him on the midweek show was because maybe he felt the physicality might get the better of him. What would you do with him on Sunday?
I think the best reason to not start Vaid is because you want him on the pitch at the same time as Isak, and you want him to be the fittest version of himself for that. So the big Vaid question for me is, does he have 95, 100 minutes in him at the Hill Dickinson after Tuesday night, and also just in general? Does he currently have that in him? If he doesn't, then I think there is actually a stronger argument to not start him and have the idea that at some point, probably 60 minutes when Rio's race is run, you're bringing on, and probably Frimpong's race is run if you start Frimpong, you're bringing on Vaid and Isak off the basis of the fact that Vaid is going to come on and play. What is his position? He plays, Liverpool play 4-2-1-3. This is what it should be. And Vaid is in the one. Vaid is the one. And he goes whenever the space is and he flits around the pitch and he uses his intelligence. And then from there, you know, at that point, if you've started Frimpong and you've started Ingemauer comes off, Gakpo goes left, Frimpong comes off, Jones or Szoboszlai end up playing right back. And through the middle of the pitch is Isak with Vaid in behind and Salah's on the right. And that's what you go to. I would start Ingemauer because I think the idea of Gakpo getting tangled up in a physical contest with the giant O'Brien for 90 minutes does not appeal to me. So I'd rather throw the idea of Ingemauer, who I think we've got to be correct with Rio. He's got unbelievably fast feet and he's very quick over 10 yards. But he's not rapid. Yeah, he's not 50 yards of sprint rapid. But O'Brien's quicker than you think as well. But does O'Brien really want to be twisting and turning? Is he going this way? Is he going that way? So I would have an hour of Rio up against him and go from there. And I think you probably do have to start Frimpong in the game, but I think you have to acknowledge that he may only have himself sort of an hour in there and they're trying to manage this hamstring issue. So if you do that, it then throws other things open. I would start, if all things were equal, I would start Szoboszlai and Gravenberch as a two. Szoboszlai to the right, and I would of the two, and I would start Vaid off the front. But if Vaid does not have, if they feel as though he does not have the ability to still be punching on 85, 90, then I think there becomes an argument then to do it a little bit differently. But my ideal would be Vaid behind Gakpo, Ingemauer left, Salah right. Vaid is going to get 100 minutes. Isak's going to come on at some point, and then you might have to move something at right back at some point as well. I'm agnostic, like KO1. Robertson or Kerkez, you can make an argument for either of them, and you've got to trust whichever one the manager goes with. And I think then the rest of it sort of from there pretty much picks itself. And I think that should be the thing about another reason to play Vaid, just to end on it, is he's going to have to play in these games next season. So what are we doing in terms of what are we saying? Oh, we can't do it now, but we want to be able to do it next season. Fucking grow up.
I mean, there is an option that Nigel literally took the other night, starting Vaid on the right instead of Salah.
Yeah, I just think you're moving him. I'd just rather play him. If you're going to play him, I'd rather you just pick him where he wants to play.
I think he has to be the one. He has to be a floating.
Yeah, so that's what you do.
Team has to exist for him to be completely free to do whatever he wants to do.
And if you also want to make changes, then as it wears on because you want an additional midfielder, because God forbid Liverpool are ahead in the game, then fine, you know what I mean? And if it ends up being that he actually goes over to the left because you want to stiffen the sinews in the middle of the park because Liverpool have got an advantage,
yeah.
Fine, you know, fine with that. But I'm very, you know, in the same way Keo said before, he thinks Frimpong's going to play more as a right-sided forward, possibly for Liverpool moving forward from this point. Like, if that's the case, sell him and get a proper right-sided forward.
Would you have concerns though, Neil? Because you've mentioned Frimpong there, there's Kerkez, Vaid, there's Rio, there's Salah.
You're going to say about the height.
I've named half a team there. That's on the fact.
So that's why one of the reasons why it wouldn't surprise me if you do end up starting Robertson, because you fancy him more for that particular challenge. I think that you've got to sort of roll with a couple of those punches in there.
But also, if they're going to just do what they did against Man United, which is just swing them in under the bar, then it just becomes entirely about what you're doing with your centre-halves and your big midfielders and what the goalkeeper's doing. And the goalkeeper's going to have to be bold as brass, I think, and accept that they're going to try to bully him and push him and shove him and all of that sort of stuff. I don't think, you know, the set pieces are they're their own challenge. If, though, you end up logically, you know, what you do, at some point these lads are going to be on the pitch, all the ones that you've just named. So you've got to have an idea, you've got to have a plan for it. And again, I'm almost a little bit like grow up in that these are your players, Liverpool. So if you can't work out a plan of what to do with them, then don't come crying to me.
Score prediction?
I think Liverpool are going to win.
And you're leaving it there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
2-1 to us.
Keo?
1-1.
1-1.
That will do us. Thank you to all the boys. I will see you very soon.